I would like to call the meeting to order. Councillor Thompson, would you please say the prayer?
Grant us, O God, perception and patience, that justice, truth, and honesty may be evident in our planning and our governing. Make us aware of each need of each part of this town of Caledon. Save us from the parochialism that divides, and so create in us the desire for progress and responsible action, that all our words and deeds may be in thy accord, or thy will, or thy glory, or thy holy name. Amen.
Thank you. Is there any disclosure? Well, I guess I should go to the agenda first. Moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Paderak, that the agenda for the June 17th, 2014 council meeting be approved. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest? Seeing none. I have a motion moved by Councillor Paderak, seconded by Councillor McClure, that council convene into council workshop. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay. And who's? Mr. Manley?
Good morning, Madam Mayor. Good morning, members of council. It's my pleasure this morning to make a presentation to you with one of the consulting team members from the Mayford West Phase 2 Secondary Plan team. We're here this morning because we'd like to present to you an update on where we're at with the third phase of the work program for the Phase 2 Secondary Plan. And this is a great opportunity for us to come back to you and to continue the discussion on how we believe that the design and planning for MW2 Mayford West Phase 2 will be unique, innovative, and successful. So this morning's presentation is going to be in three parts, a short part, one by myself, introducing the team and the project background. We will then hand over to John Richard from NAC Design Strategies, who will be presenting the main part of the presentation this morning, and then a short piece following that by myself again, just to indicate to you the next steps moving forward to completion of the secondary planning project. So by way of introductions, this morning assisting me with this presentation, the town has retained a multidiscipline team to help staff assemble all the necessary studies and analysis required to support and inform the secondary planning process. And this morning here I have with me, as I mentioned, John Richard from NAC Design Strategies. They're retained by the town to be our urban design team on the project, as well as we have Bill O'Brien and John Vandermark from Paradigm Transportation Solutions. Their team is responsible for putting together the transportation master plan, and that again informs and supports the planning process. By way of background, it's been a little while since I've been before you speaking to the project, Back in September of last year, you endorsed a framework plan for this planning exercise, and we confirmed the area that would be planned and designed as a first stage, and subsequently, since September, the town has applied to Region Appeal to get a seek an amendment to their official plan to obtain the urban boundary expansion to help implement this secondary plan process. More on that a little later. Before I move into the main part of my background, if I may, in anticipation of some questions I'm sure I will get this morning from you, I just wanted to say this. We have a couple of hours with you this morning, and it's a really useful and an opportune couple of hours, and we've tried to really focus in on some key themes this morning that we wanted to present to you to help continue that dialogue on what's new, what's innovative, what's unique, etc. We couldn't cover everything that we are working on with respect to the entire community, and so some themes today haven't made it into the presentation. And I just wanted to take this opportunity, and I'm sure there'll be other times during the presentation when I can say to you that these haven't been forgotten, these are still work in progress, and at a point in time in the future, we'll come back and talk to you and update you on those themes. Things like the low-impact development idea. Introducing some practices and some techniques around low-impact development is very much on the table for this community, and as I said, it's something that we'll continue to work on and come back at a point in the future and talk to you about that very important discipline. The other one I wanted to mention very briefly, because I know it's important to you, with respect to our residential housing product in MW2, you know, we are seeking to do what we can to reduce energy consumption and water consumption with respect to that product. And we are working with our colleagues at Enbridge and CMHC to put together, I think, a very neat idea that provides incentives to the residential building community to seek energy and water reduction in MW2. So that said, I will move on into the main thrust of the presentation and really zero in on some key themes today. So this for me, and I hope for you as well, really sets the stage for what MW2 should all be about. You know, this is why MW2, in our opinion, needs to be different. Designing our communities, our cities around cars, we believe only attracts more cars, really puts the emphasis on the cars. And what we really need to be doing is designing our cities and our communities around people and our cyclists and our pedestrians. And we think that promotes a greater opportunity for our pedestrians and our people to get out and about and enjoy our new communities. That said, we recently in May of 2014, had a call to action by the Medical Officers of Health in the Greater Toronto and Hamilton area, who have said that we need to build physical activity back into people's lives. We have, over the last few decades in designing our new greenfield communities, perhaps not put a greater emphasis on the ability of people to really enjoy their neighborhoods, their communities, and we really need to start thinking about putting physical activity into people's lives because, and this isn't the thrust of my presentation, but this is the background, you know, there's health implications. The rising levels of obesity and diabetes, to name a few, are really setting the stage for this call of action. And I think this, for us, is a great opportunity to deliver something unique and innovative here that isn't being done. And this is why the call to action was put out there by these medical officers of health. So that said, how do we put physical activity back into people's lives? Well, it starts with planning and designing a healthy community. And that has several components to it. A pedestrian-friendly community, transit-supportive, and a community that enables and encourages physical activity through active transportation. This is a term you've probably heard in the past and will continue to, I'm sure. And just what does that mean? Basically, it means providing opportunity for people to walk, cycle, or rollerblade to a destination as opposed to getting in their car and driving a block, 2 blocks, a mile or so to get to their destination. So the following elements on this slide indicate generally the key influences to achieving a successful active transportation community. And these three themes, density, walkability, and public transit, are the focus of our presentation today. So we are using these to deliver to you where we are at today in designing and planning MW2. I mentioned John Richard from NAC Design Strategies. Their key deliverable for the community is a community design plan, and the transportation master plan being done by Paradigm and Bill's team again is a key document to help deliver the message on what this community is going to be all about with respect to density, walkability, and public transit. And again, there's a few items under each of these headings, and John Richard is going to go through those and deliver a presentation and keep coming back to these themes of density, walkability, and public transit. And once John has finished his presentation, that's probably a great opportunity for some question and answers with you and him and I, and then possibly Bill's team if necessary. So with that, if I may, I'd like to call John up and ask John to continue with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Good morning, Madam Mayor and members of Council. As Tim has discussed, we're here to really focus on three critical aspects of the community design, and that is density, walkability, and public transit. And these three aspects are really interconnected and interdependent, interrelated, and they're at the core of achieving a unique, innovative, and successful community. As Tim has explained, this slide shows the endorsed framework plan with the phase one boundary in bold, but we really did plan this and design this holistically, so it really is about the whole Mayfield phase two development area from Chincoosie all the way to here, Ontario, and Mayfield Road all the way to the Greenbelt area. But this plan does achieve the following. It achieves within that phase one area the density requirements that were set out for us. It preserves and enhances a robust natural heritage system. It creates a logically interconnected road system. Provides a mix of densities and a strategy for locating those densities that are beneficial to the really the three core aspects of the community. It proposes open space amenities that are accessible from all neighborhoods in terms of walkability. Provides logical connections and interface with the green lands to the north. Provides shorter block lengths for easier walkability once again. Has a comprehensive trail network that I will discuss in a later slide. It has a hierarchy of neighborhood, community, and region-wide commercial units and opportunities. Has a significant employment lands in the northeast corner of the development area. And has special character areas that I'd like to start off describing. These three special character areas in particular are the urban village that is centered by the intersection of the introduced Spine Road and McLaughlin Road. The Spine Road itself is what we consider a special character area in the sense that it becomes the main street and character avenue for the community. And there's the railway interface with the Orangeville-Brampton railway line. So starting off with the urban village, as I say, this is centered by the intersection of McLaughlin Road and the introduced Spine Road. It contains higher density residential with a mix of residential types, including townhouse, live-work units, and mid-rise condominium. And that would be located in the northeast corner of that intersection. Retail and service outlets in the form of live-work units and a commercial block at the southwest corner with potential opportunities for, potentially, as I say, for accurate retail associated with the mid-rise condominium. We're thinking that the mid-rise condominium would be geared towards seniors living or adult lifestyle community just to add to the diversity of what will be associated with the urban village. There's a major recreation facility and community park in the southeast corner. Associated with both the condominium and the recreation facility, or at the forecourt of those two uses, are two village squares. The village squares are seen as passive community gathering areas that are unprogrammed or programmed activities, so that you do have this space that communities can get together, where whether it's a farmer's market, where it's public art sales, or anything like that, that has a reason for needing that space. So they'll be designed as really urban type squares. Parking for this immediate area will be in the form of lay-by parking along the Spine Road. We've introduced some flankage type parking associated with the townhouses and live-work units. There's parking associated, of course, with the commercial block, and there would be parking with the recreation facility and community park, and even potentially underground parking associated with the mid-rise condominium. On-street bike lane connections will be along the Spine Road and McLaughlin Road, so it will certainly be easily accessible by safe and efficient bike routes that connect with the overall trail network. The width of the Spine Road itself will be minimized through the urban village to reduce traffic speeds and create a more comfortable pedestrian-scaled environment. So really, it's creating a mix of uses that attracts a diversity of people throughout the day and evening, including seniors, students, shoppers, recreation facility users, cyclists, and other residents. And the viability of the retail service and recreation amenities really are greatly supported by the dense population base within the urban village. The urban village will be characterized by an attractive public realm that will encourage walking connections that are safe and logical. And really, we need to create conditions that award the short trip over the long trip. Basically, the variety of functions and amenities within the urban village are intended to attract pedestrians from the surrounding neighborhoods as an alternative to residents using their cars to go elsewhere for some of their day-to-day recreation, leisure, and purchasing requirements. So the urban village will be directly connected by bus transit both along the Spine Road and McLaughlin Road, and will be in close proximity to a proposed transit hub that would be further to the east associated with the commercial lands. So this is just, at the very top, a conceptual perspective of what the urban village could look like. This is looking east along Spine Road. It's just a concept, but what it does describe is that the Spine Road itself will be multimodal, have cyclists, public transit, and vehicles. There would be plenty of spaces for pedestrians, both in the urban village as well as the sidewalk, conducive to larger pedestrian congregation. And really, it's about creating a village center that's the gathering space in itself. So the street is a gathering space, the village square is a gathering space, and the uses really encourage people to gather there as pedestrians, cyclists, and as transit users, as well as car connections. So lower left photo is just an example of a village square that's been used as a weekly functional space for the community. And on the right is included as an example is the Bolton River's Edge condominium project that is an example of higher density adult lifestyle development that works well and is well weaved into the urban fabric. And we hope to do something along those lines for MW2. The second special character area I'd like to speak of is the Spine Road. And rather than merely an arterial road that takes you from one end to the other as quickly as possible, the Spine Road will serve as the main street for the community and really the character avenue for the community. It should be a main street in the traditional sense, where it will be characterized by a range of land uses and residential types that attract people for a multitude of reasons, using all modes of transportation: walking, cycling, public transit, and cars. The character and function of the streetscape will reflect the adjacent land use function and therefore will transition from one end to the other. We describe these sections really as zones in this case, and we've identified three zones, zones A, B, and C. Zone A, as you can see, is located between Chinkoozie and a north-south collector road. And this primarily includes front and lane access, medium density or townhouse and single detached residential units, as well as frontage onto some of the natural heritage systems. The streetscape is intended in this area to be more traditional with the sidewalk set back from the property line and the planting of trees and grass boulevards between the sidewalk and curb. The cross-section for the spine road in this zone would be a three-lane cross-section, a single lane in either direction with a left-turn middle lane. We would have dedicated on-street bike lanes at the curbside in either direction. So really the intent is to limit the width as appropriate to vehicular traffic levels so that we're not creating an environment that is hostile to pedestrians and cyclists. Rather, we're wanting to obviously encourage as much of that use as possible. Zone B, as you can see in the plan, is really centered around the urban village area. And as already described, the urban village will contain a variety of uses that are intended to attract users throughout the community. And so we want to create a streetscape that will respond to a greater density of pedestrians accessing stores, services, townhouses, live-work units, et cetera, directly from the adjacent sidewalk. So the streetscape will have an urban character largely comprised of hard surface materials to accommodate a greater influx of pedestrians, essentially a wider sidewalk with a street tree placement considering things such as tree grates or planters that are distinctly associated with this community, so that really lends a character element to this part of the community. Family of streetscape furniture will be introduced, one that's a common family, so it has a similar design aesthetic for all components of the streetscape furniture, whether it be benches, waste receptacles, street lighting, bike racks, et cetera. So we want to create a streetscape environment that is seen as a gathering place in itself, one that it very much reflects the function of the urban village and the character of the community. Again, the roadway will continue with a three-lane cross-section, single lane in either direction, with a middle left turn lane, and obviously at the intersection of McLaughlin Road, we'll have a widening of that roadway, but beyond that, it does continue with the three-lane cross-section, and again, with the bike lanes at the curbside. Allowances will be made for lay-by parking along the spine road to provide convenient access adjacent to retail and services. Zone C, as you see in the plan, is more associated with the commercial lands just off of Her Ontario on the north side, as well as lane-based townhouse and Peel Region police lands on the south side. There's also high density development at the northwest corner of the intersection of the Spine Road and Collector Road. So when designing the streetscape for Zone C, we actually see it transitioning from here Ontario Street to that intersection where the medium density or high density and the transit hub is proposed. So we may think that the streetscape starting from here Ontario in as something that is associated with commercial lands, and those commercial lands may likely have larger format type commercial uses in closer to here Ontario. So we want a streetscape that responds to that. And in that case, we may have something similar to what's on the left picture, which is a more traditional approach in the sense that you have a sidewalk with trees and grass boulevards between the sidewalk and curb, and potentially buffer planting and a second row of trees between the sidewalk and the built form. But as you approach the intersection, again, from the plan, the intersection with the collector road, we may start to look at integrating a smaller format commercial, a commercial that would be accessed from the street, and commercial that can take advantage of the higher population or density of pedestrians that are associated with the transit hub and the higher density and medium density residential that's in and around that intersection. So again, what we'd like to achieve from a streetscape standpoint associated with that area is something more similar to what we're proposing for the urban village, in which you would have wider sidewalk areas for that higher density of walkers and pedestrians and people accessing the stores from the street, introducing elements, street tree elements, such as tree grates and tree planters that are more urban focused, attractive, and really lend a certain character to this area. And just as Tim has pointed out with respect to cars, it works reversed in the sense that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy to where you create places for pedestrians, you're going to get more pedestrians. So it's the lesson we're trying to really integrate into everything we do as far as all the elements in the community design. The third character element or feature that we'd like to talk about is the railway interface, and that's, of course, the Orangeville-Brampton railway line. We see the railway line, rather than a constraint, we see it as really a great opportunity to introduce a unique open space feature for the community. The rail lands interface will be characterized by a continuous planter buffer on either side of a rail line, integrated with a trail system that's part of the overall trail master plan. So it's achieving that interconnected opportunity throughout the community, and the railway line is just one avenue in doing so. Associated with the trail connections and the trails on either side would be certain amenity features, such as a seating amenity at key areas and even corner feature amenities. And these amenities would allow everything from trail information to information perhaps regarding the history of the railway line to just wayfinding information, as well as shade structures and seating opportunities for those using the trails for recreation. The buffer itself, we'll face onto a local street, and this local street will have street or front access residential, and the idea being that we want that attractive interface all along this railway line. So we're not turning our backs on a railway line. We're actually trying to integrate this line through the buffer, through the trails, through an attractive streetscape into the community. Obviously, there are a multitude of components that will contribute to creating a walkable, cycling-friendly community. One of the major components is the integration of the open space features, both preserved, as in the case of the natural heritage system, existing, as in the Greenbelt plan area to the north, and introduced, such as a network of community and neighborhood parks and stormwater management ponds and channels. A substantial, robust natural heritage system will be preserved and designed to meet the environmental objectives to creating an ecologically diverse, healthy, and sustainable natural heritage system in an urbanizing environment. The proposed land use fabric throughout the community, including streets, residential blocks, schools, etc., has in large part evolved from the prominent natural heritage system layout and designation. And this natural heritage system will provide amenity features within walking distance of each neighborhood, really, just by the way it's located, including the integration of the green system trails that I'll again touch upon a bit later. Just going back, One particular open space feature that we think is obviously important is the greenbelt interface. The Greenbelt interface, again along the north side of the community, will be characterized by a mix of adjacent land uses, including residential rear lotting, stormwater management ponds. There's a couple of three neighborhood parks or parkettes, and we also have an existing school at the northeast corner. The swim ponds or stormwater management ponds are considered a compatible use with the Greenbelt interface, and several, as you can see, have been situated at the north edge of the community. So this is just a rendering or a concept of how we can integrate these trails along the rear, in between the rear property and the buffer to the Greenbelt. So we're integrating, the idea is to integrate a trail that's a key component of the overall trail network that feeds into some of the connections going south and allows you to traverse east-west in the north side. So it's a great opportunity, a great method in trying to integrate the Greenbelt itself into the community and certainly making it not just something to view, but something you could actually interact with. And the way we always design ponds, such as in the left corner, is through obviously a naturalized approach that they become real benefit in terms of creating that natural habitat and a real great kind of interface use with the existing Greenbelt area. Parks, a hierarchy of parks has been strategically situated throughout the community to respond to pedestrian connections at a neighborhood scale and provide facilities at a community-wide scale. So we have a community park and recreation facility proposed within the urban village at the southeast corner of this introduced Spine Road and McLaughlin Road. And that is, of course, intended to attract from the larger community area. We've identified three neighborhood parks within the plan, and these are to serve multiple neighborhoods surrounding each, all within walking distance. These neighborhood parks have been coupled with schools to create, in essence, a multi-neighborhood hub or focus with the potential for shared use of some of the facilities. The plan here shows 500-meter radius circles, and really those roughly represent 67-minute walking distances. And we did it as an exercise just to see how well we've located these parks and to ensure that they do serve surrounding neighborhoods in a walkable sense. Now you can see there's obviously some white area that is to the southwest, and this is probably something we can address with another introduced parkette feature, and something going forward we'll have those discussions. But it does serve its purpose in a sense that by locating parks, we're really trying to address the idea that these parks serve the multi-neighborhoods and they need to be walkable, and we need people on the streets and encouraged to go walking, cycling to these amenities. As I say in previous, when talking about the urban village, we do have village squares located at the intersection of the Spine Road and McLaughlin Road, and these are of a more urban kind of square, different than, in essence, the neighborhood park and the parkette, in the sense that they're really more public squares that have unprogrammed or programmed opportunities, spaces for the community at large. This slide shows just an example of a facility fit for the community recreation facility and community park at the left. And as you can see, and as common with other neighborhood parks itself, we've located it adjacent to a school. This school is a secondary school, the only one that's found within the MW2 community. So what it shows is the recreation facility building at the top left. Associated with that would be a full-size soccer or athletic field. There's parking. There is the junior and senior play structures. There's opportunities for a splash pad. There's unprogrammed or open space areas that can also house hard court features, tennis, basketball, etc. And we've also introduced community gardens. Community gardens, we feel, is a great feature because it's in essence kind of a reflection of the agrarian heritage of the community. And we think community gardens are an important and valuable opportunity to link with the past while still providing opportunities for a wider participation in the parks from the community. In addition to, say, the general population that use parks, the community gardens represents a great activity for seniors and retirees and will serve as educational opportunities for the adjacent student population. So where we do have things such as neighborhood parks and the community parks, and the mere fact that we're linking it with schools, that there is that kind of across opportunity in terms of educational element, that they could use the gardens as well as the community use the gardens. So we just think it really encourages a sense of ownership in the parks. These images just describe some of the elements that we really tried to strive for in the parks. And at right is an example of a community garden found within a park. Lower, in the lower right, is the opportunity to use existing heritage resources either in a functional sense or in a commemoration sense within the park. So we're again reflecting the past with what we do in the future, and it becomes important kind of just a historical note to know where the community has come from. When we do design parks, we obviously have the standard park components that are actually quite important, you know, the play structures, the swings, et cetera. But we also, to complement those standard play structures, we also want to introduce something that's more unique and innovative to the park. And that could be anything such as landform changes within the park, just to give it some visual interest. There's the ideas that we should start looking at every component and thinking what we could do to expand on the idea. So when we say there's a 12-foot by 12-foot sandbox, which is often typical to a park, why not expand that whole notion into a larger sandbox, almost like an adventure playground area where you're introducing things such as logs or water features and other elements such as shovels. So all of a sudden you're expanding the age range of who uses this sandbox area. It's not the toddler, it could be anyone from, you know, 2 to 10. And the pictures you see there is an actual example. Those shovels are just shovels that are always used by the community, and they're never taken. You know, they always stay within the park area, and because the community has a sense of ownership. And so that's what we would always like to strive when doing the park designs, that we're doing something that is a reflection of the community and that the community feels involved and therefore feel like they have a sense of ownership. And certainly the community gardens is a key component of that. So really, I guess that's the main message. And it's not something that is necessarily store-bought, but we really have to start thinking in an innovative sense when we do these park designs. Stormwater management ponds, in addition to their primary water quality and control functions, storm ponds will provide a secondary role by complementing the parks and open space system through provisions of the extension of the trail network and the integration of community features such as lookouts and seating areas. In the top left corner, you just see a concept that depicts that idea where you do have a lookout and seating area that's interconnected with the trail system, and that trail system within the pond is connected with the overall trail system. So again, you're creating this really comprehensive connection system for cyclists, pedestrians, and any kind of recreation users. A naturalized native planting design approach is, of course, an undertaking for storm ponds. And what results is that these storm ponds become a valuable habitat link as a complement to the natural heritage system. Lookouts within each pond will be designed to take advantage of desirable views, particularly where adjacent to NHS areas and greenbelt lands. And as I say, these are all lookouts are connected with the pond trails and serve as valuable seating areas for the users. So again, it's all about creating amenity features that really encourage walkability cyclists for people to be active within their community. So you're creating destinations even within each and every neighborhood. So I spoke of the overall trail and cycling network, and this was worked out with Paradigm, who are the transportation engineers for Mayfield West Phase 2. And it's a comprehensive trail and cycling network with multiple connections for walkers, cyclists, and recreation users. And I'll just describe some of the areas. As you can see, there's bike lanes that were designating. These are on-street type bike lanes, so on the pavement, that were designated for Chinkuzi Road, along the Spine Road, and along McLaughlin Road. And I apologize for some of the color distinction. It's not as vibrant and different as we see on our computer. But there's also bike lanes or pavement widening in the kind of the light brown tone. So those could either be bike lanes, on-street bike lanes, such as you would see on McLaughlin or Spine Road or Chinkuzi, or they could be just widening up the lanes to better accommodate cyclists. So that's still working its way through in terms of which collector roads will have which. There's the potential open space link associated with the greenbelt area at the top. So that runs all the way along that edge. It connects the storm ponds, it connects the parks, and it connects any of the north-south trail connections. So it again becomes an important link for the overall network. There's a multi-use path, which are typically found within the boulevards of arterial roads, and we have that associated with the Mayfield Road. And we do have it extending from the Collector Road just south of the existing school in the northeast corner, and also extending north from that to the Greenbelt Trail. Green system trails are an obvious and important opportunity for linkages, and they're found within the buffers of the natural heritage system. They're found along, as described, along the OBRY railway line, and they'll be also linked through the parks and the schools. And with all these trail connections, we'd like to introduce trail gateways, and those are in the kind of the pale yellow circles. And those are opportunities for wayfinding, to demarcate where the trails are, to give you a sense of the whole trail network. So if you're actually navigating for purposes of recreation, you know where you are at any given time within the whole network. And they also give opportunities for providing community information or providing information in regards to the natural heritage system where there are sensitive areas and instructions in that regard. So again, just to repeat, we're going to have within the trail network, there are on-street bike lanes. There'll be multi-use trails located within boulevards, such as on Mayfield Road. There's important pathway connections through stormwater management ponds and channels. And there's the green system trails associated with primarily the natural heritage system and the railway line. A substantial commercial and employment use is, of course, proposed for the northeast portion of the development area, extending north from the Spine Road all the way to the Greenbelt and existing school, as well as south of the Spine Road in the form of the Hill Region police lands. The commercial lands are intended to integrate a mix of small to large format retail and service uses. Perhaps a larger format will be located in closer proximity to here, Ontario, or the northern extent of that commercial area in purple, with smaller format associated with the Collector Road to the west and further down in and around the intersection of the Spine Road and the Collector Road. particularly related to street-facing built form, buildings shall represent strong architectural design with quality adjacent streetscape and open space design. It is expected that a significant portion of the employment lands will be designed for prestige or office use. And as with the commercial, the employment lands should exemplify quality architecture and open space design that encourages walkability with clearly articulated pedestrian connections that are safe, comfortable, and enable direct connections, all within an attractive built form environment. Obviously, a pedestrian-friendly environment will help promote transit connections. And very importantly, a transit hub is proposed integrated within the commercial lands and the Spine Road Collector Road intersection within close proximity to the employment land. So we do have this density of population that certainly we could benefit from a streetscape environment that that accommodates the pedestrian flows, that is attractive, that really starts to encourage people to take alternative modes of transportation to this area. So the transit hub is a key component of the community building strategy and an important tool for encouraging transit use connections on a local and regional scale. Given that it is integrated with the commercial lands and in close proximity to the employment lands further north, the hub will provide convenient and logical transit connections for really a large population base. It is expected to connect multiple transit providers from local and regional areas with direct links to either to the Georgetown, Mount Pleasant, or Brampton GO stations. So we're looking at transit not only in a local sense, but in a regional sense, so we do start to capture more and more ridership requirements. So just as an overview of the transit service, and again, this is something that's still being studied and in process, this plan indicates the transit strategy so far for Mayfield. And it's expected to encompass three transit service providers, including local bus routes, the Brampton Rapid Transit route, and the GO Transit service provider, all of which will link at the proposed transit hub that you see at the southwest corner of that commercial hub area. The local bus route will run along the Spine Road. We'll have connections into Brampton and Mount Pleasant community to the south along McLaughlin Road and along the Collector Road to the west. It will also extend north from the Spine Road and loop around coming back to the hub, as you can see there. The BRT, or Brampton Rapid Transit, is expected to extend north from Brampton and connect again with the transit hub. And the GO Transit, as you can see, is expected to have connections going east. With that, I'd like to hand it back to Tim. Thank you.
Thanks, Jill. I think maybe what we'll do, because you're going to talk about where we go from here.
I was just going to speak very briefly about EMMET to this slide, and then I was going to go to the next piece so we can stop and take a break for questions.
Okay, I think what we're going to do before you go to moving forward and next steps, we'll have the questions answered, because the moving forward and next steps, I doubt there'll be too many questions on that. Okay?
For sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I would just like to take just a minute or two just to speak to this slide, and this slide follows on from the discussion that John just presented on the public transit concept plan for MW2. That plan is the extent of that plan and the scope of that plan is unprecedented for Caledon and a new community in Caledon. So inevitably, there are questions that need to be asked and answered. And one of those, more importantly, probably, is the funding issue. So we here have identified a shopping list of things that need to be funded, and we're working with our colleagues in City of Brampton to expand, if necessary, on this shopping list. But with respect to the transit hub itself, we've got to acquire land, we've got to construct the hub, we've got to operate and maintain the hub. We being collectively, I'm not saying Caledon, collectively, the operation and maintenance of the hub needs to be addressed. And then there's the provision of the stops themselves. So we've all seen transit stops, what they look like. and the associated infrastructure with those, the seating, the shelters, the receptacles, all those good things, they need to be funded, maintained and replaced. And then there's the provision of the service itself. So those are, that's a starting point for a shopping list of items that need to be funded. We suggest that the answers to how, the funding mechanism to fund those, that shopping list needs to be confirmed through this secondary planning process. And the vehicle for doing that is an ongoing fiscal and economic impact study that Watson and Associates are doing for the town, for MW2. And the fiscal and economic impact study is looking at the implications for the development charge and property tax base for the residents of Caledon and also the development industry. And essentially, in a nutshell, the FIS identifies what needs to be funded, when it needs to be funded, and how. So I just today wanted to present that to you. We could probably have a two-hour session on that slide alone. I don't propose today we have that, but I wanted to put that on the table today because I thought it was an important element for you to understand moving forward. That said, Madam Mayor, I'd love to take some questions.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Thompson.
Thank you, Tim. If you can go to your slide 10, probably be the easiest, if you could, please. First thing I will say, though, too,
would you like
is
to tell us what? They don't have them numbered here, so.
Oh, I'm just so going to, I have no mouse, Madam Mayor, so I'm just going
right
to.
Right in the bottom corner.
Bottom corner.
There we go.
Oh, the, it's so light you can't read it.
Exactly.
That's cute.
That's
okay.
Part of their scheme.
Oh.
Tim, thanks for this, and just to work from this drawing up, that's okay. One thing is with the transit plan, I can tell you with Southfields, we have designed for transit. It's funny, the majority don't want it, the minority do, and it's tough once you get something to, I think it's better if we do a transit plan learning to do the west side, incorporate it from the start, so you're correct on that. One thing I got to say is I like your streets, I like your lay-bys for your busing, but the big thing is learning from what Brampton Mississauga said, what gets costly is running up and down the streets, stay on the spine roads. But what we have to do is design our trailways, our spine roads, so the people that are living on those streets that want to take transit have an easy way of getting to that bus stop. We have to, you know, I know it's all grid system building houses, I think we're going to have to get creative. How do we, well, you want people to take transit, you want people to cycle, we have to start to build and engineer it that way. And the engineers do have it figured out. I just think we just need to create that consultation saying, okay, so how do we make that work? And to me is yeah, I like your trailway connectivity through there, but this is where I'm going to get into the LID because it all ties together. Directly to the southwest of Mayfield Road is a community in Brampton that's totally LID, no stormwater ponds whatsoever. Alton Hills, all their last three developments they've had have been totally LID. And stormwater ponds are a liability for the taxpayer down the road. And having said that, your design of what stormwater ponds that you'll want to do up in the Greenbelt, beautiful, I'm good with it. Where I'm coming from is along Mayfield Road, you've got all these stormwater ponds that are going to be future liability. Why aren't we making them as lateral trailways and passageways? Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio are miles ahead of us. They have severe storm events, and these things work well. And I mean, if we're going to be LID, then let's go LID and let's engineer it from the start so it's not costly to the developer. Everybody wins if it's designed correctly. I have a huge issue with these stormwater ponds down at the bottom end. To me is we can make them into trailway connectivities. It's great for people that want to do some mountain biking and another way for people to have exercise. Because with the intensification that we're creating in these communities now, people do not have backyards. And the challenge that Councillor McClure and I are having with Southfields is we're already dealing with that, and people need park space to get out and enjoy, and our parks are so far behind, it's a challenge. And I'm going to tell you every time we meet with the community, what's Gordon and I being asked about is the parks, being able to have a place to enjoy, something to gather, especially on Sundays and Saturday afternoons, because they're not having birthday parties in the backyards now. They want to have them in the parks or amenities. And the other area is lack of picnic and green space to enjoy. And I know that was partially with some of your green, with what you want to do with your stormwater ponds, but I don't really think they're designed. We need something in a central gathering place. And I'm going to tell you, we're learning from experience. And I think with Southfields is one of the most intensified areas that we've built in Caledon so far, and we're going to intensify greater. So we have to, now hearing and listening to the residents, I'm realizing, okay, we have to do this better. And here's an opportunity. I got to say, everything you guys have done, it's creative, it's good. I'm not criticizing. What I'm trying to do is try to say, we just got to push these things. You're on the right track. We just got to push them further.
Okay, thank you.
And I think that's where the other thing, too, is I agree with this question I have with the cycling. Who's the expertise you have working on your cycling?
In the house, I have John Vandermark from Paradigm Transportation.
Okay. Has he talked to the local cycle groups or different ones for their intel on what they're maybe looking for, or has he worked with cycle communities? I'm not second-guessing his expertise, but I'm just saying, you know, having community engagement gets community buy-in and community usage, right?
Madam Mayor, through you, I'll look to you for direction. I could invite John up here to give you a 1.5-minute summary of his background, which is excellent and astonishing in this regard, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Or we can do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
John, would you like to come up, please? So, Madam Mayor, through you to Councillor Thompson. Councillor Thompson, just a background on John's experience with respect to introducing cycling and...
You need to come up to the microphone,
sorry.
Please.
The other thing, too, Tim, if I could ask, is what are we building for infrastructure to service that area? You know, like, it's great to have all the cycling, but do we have places to, you know, park the bikes and hang up the bikes and stuff like that, I guess.
So, John, if you could you give Council just a minute and a half of your background and speak to that last question, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor, for for your question. I've been involved with the cycling community for quite a long time. I'm an active cyclist myself.
Perfect.
I'm still cycling on both on the roads and on the trails. I have not consulted with the local community, the cycling community, but over the years I've been involved with many cycling groups. I was a commuter cyclist. I'm still what is called a utilitarian cyclist, someone who cycles to do errands, to go to the library, etc., as well as a recreational cyclist. So the system that we have designed here is responding to all kinds of cyclists, both those who are a little fearful on the road, as well as those who are... active cycling, including racers. That's why we have designed, for instance, the spine road with bicycle lanes, because it is also safer.
Yeah.
And that is a very important point in the for the cycling community, too, that our cycling facilities are safe. And the major problems often are at intersections. Again, that's why we have many bike lanes here. We recognize, and the trails, that trails are important, and one can cycle in this community as we have designed it in different types of loops. We have connected the cycling system to the Etobicoke Creek and to the future Fletcher Creek as well as, and that is of course a future one, along McLaughlin Road all the way up to the Caledon Trailway.
Wonderful. That's where I was wanting to go, and you've answered that very well, and thank you for that. And the reason why I was asking, I had one person call me last night about it, but I also was at the C3 event that we had a weekend ago, and a number of them were asking, you know, what are we doing? You know, this is great, but what are we incorporating in our new development? And I assured them we were working on it, and they said, well, what's your expertise, or what do you bring to the table? So I know there's a lot of people that are interested, but they just wanted to make sure that we had the experts that understood
And no doubt you do, and I appreciate that. But as going forward, I don't mind, I'll send through to Tim, if that's okay through you, is some of the cycle groups that if you want to have a consultation with them, that's fine, but I think you're very capable. But I just want to make sure we got that covered off. But the other challenge that I was approached by the C3 group is, it's great to build all this stuff, but we got to have the infrastructure to obtain the bikes too, and that takes up space. Yeah.
And one of my personal favorites would be, actually, if we could even connect the Elora Cataract Trail with the Callanan Trailway.
Yes.
And that is hopefully sometime in the works, but by other organizations.
Well, my goal someday is even in private land ownership, hopefully if we can build the infrastructure through here, maybe we can get easements similar to what Bruce Trail's done with the Trailway, that we can do with cycle trails to get people connected. And hopefully, maybe that's something we can do in the future.
Absolutely.
On the political side. But thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you for your presentation, Tim and John. I've broken my questions down quickly into the three categories that you've presented them: density, walkability, and public transit. One question I had for density, and certainly I do support creating a community that is more pedestrian, cycling friendly, and trying to wean people off of dependency on the car. But realizing that that is unfortunately ingrained in our North American mindset, the way that the community is structured, will there still be the availability, while we wean ourselves off the car, to have sufficient private and public parking? To serve the community while we transition into a more pedestrian cycling friendly.
Madam Mayor, through you, thank you for that question. Part of the mandate for the Transportation Master Plan, so John and Bill's team, is to prepare a parking plan for this entire community. So it will be looking at all those elements you just described in detail and making a plan specific to parking for this community. John earlier spoke to some of the parking ideas within the urban village core at the Spine Road and McLaughlin. That's one area, but expanding on that into the community, into the neighborhoods, into the low-density areas, the medium-density housing areas where we traditionally are experiencing some parking issues, those will be addressed in a parking plan specific for this community.
Yes, and I do appreciate, I did notice that particularly on the Spine Road, that there was cutouts in the roadway, like lay-by parking, if you will, around commercial areas to accommodate vehicles parking. So I thank you for that. With respect to walkability and cyclability, John spoke about not only within the community itself, but in the larger picture, you've got that large green buffer to the north. And I think I heard John say that there is, but when I looked at the slides, it's the possibility of having a trail network from east to west. Is that the vision to have that? Included in the final design? Because I think that is a great functional trail system that needs to be.
Madam Mayor, through you, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we are working with our colleagues at the Conservation Authority, the landowners, the design team, to ensure that we can put a trail network through that that open space area.
Okay.
It's a great resource. It's a great opportunity.
Absolutely. And further to that, again, panning out even further, is the expectation to have connections to Valleywood to the east, Brampton to the south. Those are existing communities. Do the what we propose line up well, and so that there's a functional larger trail connection?
Again, Madam Mayor, through you to Councillor Mazzapelli. Thank you for raising that one earlier point about the connection to Valleywood. I wanted to bring you back to slide 23, the slide I have up, and to use the cursor. This area here on the plan, we're showing an arrow going across Highway 10, 410 over towards Valleywood. This is an idea, a very real idea that we're exploring through the Transportation Master Plan, the idea of connecting Valleywood through an overpass structure of some sort or other that would be for pedestrians and cyclists. that would create that link between Valleywood and the amenities over there and vice versa over in MW2. So that's one of the links that we're working on exploring. The answer to that question, is it feasible, what it looks like, et cetera, would probably be combined with the environmental assessment that would need to be done to look at the modification to the interchange, the 410-10 interchange. So that answer would be concurrent with the design of that new interchange. That's very much a connection we're trying to create here because we think it is an obvious and logical one for pedestrians and cyclists. I think John Vandermark just spoke to the connections of the trail system north beyond MW2 up to the Trans-Canada Trail Network, et cetera. So we are sort of thinking about that as we design this trail network. And to the south, if I could show you on this slide, to the south, you see all those arrows pointing south.
Yep.
They're not just pointing south for want of pointing south. They are actually, the plan for the area south of us is well advanced. The block plan is complete and approved, and individual planning applications now are coming in for that area. So we are showing connections and ideas of how our system would connect into that already approved trail and cycling network.
Perfect.
To the south. So the idea is the two communities can
integrate
between each other. Absolutely.
Perfect. Thank you for that. Under public transit, and I know this is something I raised the first time I saw this, and I just wanted to quickly reinsert it. When we talk about public transit, largely this is focusing on the bus. I love the fact that we are really encouraging active transportation, pedestrian cycling. That's a key component as well. The one that is, in my mind, missing is the rail. And I know we have the Orangeville line running through this development. I just wanted to express my concern is that we have a rail line. I don't know what the future plans are for that line. But having a diverse mix of transportation options, rail is one of them. And I know certainly in the Bolton area, a lot of the residents that work in Toronto and other communities go rail. They don't typically get on the bus. They will opt for rail. Is there any concern that we're missing an opportunity to hook up to an existing infrastructure network being rail?
Currently, there's no GO service that's on this line or this line connecting to a GO service, so that would need to be established. So any GO service would need to be established from scratch. And on the radar, on the five-year radar for the rail operator, is no change to the current service that they're operating on that line. And certainly this line isn't on Metrolinx or GO Transit's radar. Having said that, what I would say to you is nothing we are doing here today ever precludes this line, either north of this area or south of this area, establishing a GO Rail station that could operate on a GO line if it was ever introduced. So whilst in this planning area that's before you on the board now, we're not planning and showing a GO Transit station. That doesn't preclude a station either north of here, just north of the Greenbelt plan area or further north, or perhaps south in Brampton if there's an opportunity down there. There's nothing we're doing that precludes or hinders that opportunity should it materialize in the future. But it's certainly not on the radar at the moment, Councillor.
Okay. But I appreciate the fact that it is in the back of our minds as an opportunity in the future. With the slides that showed the Spine Road and the, I think it was Zone B where it crosses the rail line, I suspect the frequency of the rail service is minimal. I don't know what the vehicular count would be, but going forward, as this community grows and the demand on the network grows, I suspect right here there is no plans for grade separation, but is there the ability, if a trigger were to be met, for that without impinging on the design that you have to create that?
Madam Mayor, through you, if I could take a couple of minutes to respond to this question, because it's an important question and an important consideration. So we've had Paradigm, our team, look at the very question you just raised. And first thing we need to understand is what are the volumes of traffic that are using the roads that cross the rail line, and what are the volumes of train trips on the rail line? And the two together, the combination of the two together equals a number. And that then, depending on what that number is, triggers the warrant for either a grade separation, gates, like those gates that just come down, or just a warning, just warning signs and pavement markings, etc. I can tell you now that there's two types of train that use the rail line at the moment. It's a freight train or an excursion train at some points during the year. And at the moment, on average, there's two train trips daily on that line. The Spine Road, the East-West Spine Road, the current, the full build-out of this community and the volume of traffic on the Spine Road and the volume of traffic on Collector Road A, which we're showing here. This is Collector Road A. When you times the volume of those traffics at full build-out by the number of train trips, two, we don't meet the warrants for grade separation. Over 200,000 would need to be the number that you'd need to achieve. We currently have about 23,000 trips projected for the Spine Road, times two train trips, about 46,000. We're very, very a long way away from achieving the warrant for a grade separation. For gates, the warrant for gates is 50,000. So we're not quite there at 50,000, so you might consider as a precautionary approach introducing gates if you thought that's the precautionary approach you wanted to take. But we do meet the warrants for grade crossing warning system, anything above 1,000. So anything times two train trips daily times whatever cars use in the road, mm-hmm. if it's above 1,000, we warrant warning system. So at the moment, we definitely warrant a warning system at both of those crossings. At both of those crossings, we currently don't warrant gates, but we're close to the Spine Road warranting gates, and we're looking at that.
Okay, and I'm sure this isn't anything new, but I guess I will just state my suggestion is that wherever we envision this community as it grows, what warrants we meet as we grow, that there is the provisions provided to incorporate whatever infrastructure is required, whether it's a gate or what have you. So I will just leave that with you. The other thing, and I know this is minor, but it is an issue we've dealt with in Bolton, and particularly considering the density of the population, is we might want to explore the, and I know there's only two trains per day, but a cease whistle order like we have in the Bolton area. It's just less of an impact, although there is the flip side, is the safety. I think you need to have the arms come down for a cease whistle order, but just to register the possibility of the proximity to the residential and the impacts of the whistle. The last question I have with respect to the rail is on this picture here, and I love the fact that you're taking advantage of those green spaces on either side of the rail line and incorporating a biking and pedestrian network. How do we control pedestrians and cyclists not going? So I'm looking at the far right on the east side. There's the trail network that runs up the east side of the line. How do we prevent them from going through the green space, across the tracks, over to the west side? I'm just concerned that we have a rail line there and we've got infrastructure for pedestrians and cyclists. We need to make sure that those don't meet other than in recognized and suggested crossings.
Thank you. We'll take that point. We'll take that point back and we'll address that. Thank you.
Okay. The last question I have, I'm sorry, Madam Mayor, is with the GTA West Corridor, apparently, at some point in the future coming through, is that part of the vision of where we expect, whether it's Mayfield Road or Highway 10 or McLaughlin Road, that will interface with the GTA West Corridor? Is that part of our is that in the back of our minds when we plan this community to make those connections to that large piece of infrastructure that's supposed to come?
Madam Mayor, through you, it's in the back, it's in the front of our mind, yes.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Panarak.
Yes, I have a couple of questions about density, but I would ask in that regard to the last comments made by, or the next to the last comments made by Councillor Mezzapelli, if you could double check those figures from OBRAG in terms of, number one, I don't believe the excursion train comes that far south. And I live within earshot of the rail line, as does the mayor. And to my knowledge, it's two trains a week.
That's about right. That two trains a week for the...
Three or four cars each train.
For the employment side.
Yes, so overall, on average, annually, every day, for both types of trip, excursion and freight, there's no more than two per day.
There isn't two a day.
There might be four excursion trains on a Saturday and a Sunday in certain seasons, but it would never average. And the excursion, you should ask OBRAG how far south they come with the excursion.
We'll double check that. Thank you. Yeah, for sure.
They're coming to Snow Grove now. Okay. My other questions concern density. And I assume that the density projection for Mayfield West 2 is 60.
Madam Mayor, that's correct. 66.9.
I think
it was
66.9. How does Mount Pleasant stack up on that? Do we know what their density? They're right below this.
They are below. Madam Mayor, through you to Councillor Paderak. Yes, they are below that. Mount Pleasant is predominantly a residential community with some shopping. We here in MW2 have a component of employment area that allows us to reduce our density, overall density. But just on an apples-to-apples, residential-to-residential product, Mount Pleasant is slightly higher than 50, not much more. Okay. We're approaching 70.
Okay. And my last question would be, in terms of the density, how does the density work out before you, even extracting the acreage of the multiple housing, before you get into your multiple housing, how does the density work out for the acreage covered by the housing and the employment? Do you have those figures? I expect you might not, but...
Madam Mayor, no, through you, I don't
I ask that question because, you know, how many years into Mayfield or Southfields, we have yet to see a multiple housing unit built. They're there. But they are part of the density. And we had questions about public transit earlier. The comment was made that a lot of people don't want it, and a minority do. But we haven't added in the multiple housing. And the multiple housing is more likely to be the component that will want transit. So I'm always concerned that when we have development, we always put the multiple housing at the end of the chain after you've got a single family community, and then everybody gets up in arms because I thought this was going to be a family community and now you're putting apartments in. And I think the message we have to send all the time is we're building complete communities and we want all kinds of people, not just families, to be living in these, and they might be older adults, they might be younger people, what have you. But that's always a concern I have, and I think when we're doing this analysis, especially on transit, we can't forget that end of the equation, especially since many of us are waiting for some multiple housing for older adults, because right now we have basically a different form of white flight. It's white-haired flight. From Caledon, people are leaving every day because they can't find accommodation after they give up their family home. Accommodation that's appropriate for them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Baffert.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. First of all, Tim, I'd like to reaffirm what I've said before, is that you and your colleagues have to be commended for the job that you're doing. It's great that you bring this forward and let us ask some questions and that you listen to us. I think the planning process has been a good one, so congratulations. I'd just like to follow up my first question on what Councillor Patterack just said. It has to do with seniors. And I'm glad to see that you've got you know, some opportunities like a river's edge type building or buildings for seniors. However, I don't see any other part of the community, and I've mentioned before that in other jurisdictions, there are areas set aside for perhaps condominium type bungalows, similar to Rosedale that's already in Brampton. So my question on that is there any opportunity in your plans, and if not, why not?
Madam Mayor, through you, absolutely, 100% there is opportunity for that form of residential development to occur in this community. We need a willing builder to build it, to want to come and build it, and it sounds like there is customers to buy that product, because we're hearing that a lot from yourselves elsewhere. But absolutely, this community that we're designing and planning with your help does allow for that kind of product to be located in MW2.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I think we have to consider carefully that all levels of government have done surveys, provincial, federal, regional, and our town, and all of them come out with the same notion that we have to have this kind of building. So it's something that's important for those people that Councillor Patterack just talked about who are selling their homes, want to stay in Caledon, and they're not ready to go into a river's edge type yet. Mm-hmm. So if you could consider that, it would be appreciated. I won't spend much time on the rail. The one thing that sort of struck me was that you've shown a double track. And I just wondered if you knew something that I didn't know. The only double track at the moment is near Snellgrove. They stop the train to move the engine from the back to the front, and that's it. It's otherwise a single track. So I just wondered if you had a surprise for us.
Madam Mayor, through you found our only mistake in our presentation today. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I think we're okay on that one. I have a question on, you've talked about density, walkability, public transit, which is all great, but you've also talked about the fact that in that walkability in the community, you've got areas where people will go to shop. What do you do about delivering goods to those particular areas? I mean, transport trucks don't go with people riding bikes and walking. So are there specific plans? I mean, Disney World put everything underneath. In tunnels. I know we're not going to do that. But are there specific plans to deliver products but try to keep them away from those bikes and walkers?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm looking for some guidance on this one. It's not an answer I myself feel comfortable answering entirely. I'm calling on Bill O'Brien, if I may, the team lead on the Transportation Master Plan, to answer that question. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Councillor, if I understood your question, it had to do with how would we manage the trucks on the local streets?
Correct.
And I think you would do it probably in the same way that you are doing it now in other communities within Caledon. You'd designate routes that would be available to trucks. This community, quite a bit of it's residential, and it won't experience a lot of truck traffic. There wouldn't be a demand for trucks, but certainly the commercial area, the employment areas, would generate some more truck traffic. And again, I would think you'd do it in the same way that you manage trucks in Bolton or in the other communities.
Okay. I think that's an important factor. I think if you are actually saying that people are going to live there but be able to walk to the local store for some of their products, then you're going to have to deliver to those stores. I mean, you could go to the extreme like they do in Crete, for example, where you deliver to a central location and then nothing but electric vehicles can be used from then on. That's going a little bit too far, but I think we just need to try to keep those trucks away from the bikes that we get people onto the bikes, and then all of a sudden you've got transport trucks. I don't know how we deal with that.
If I could add another comment, Madam Mayor, to the councillor, we have set out standards for the bike lane widths, and because these will be new roads, we will be able to provide proper standard bike lanes as well, so okay. That offers more protection and safety for the cyclists.
Okay. Just not on deliveries now, but going back to, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, the Spine Road, Tim. There was talk about two lanes, in other words, a single lane going each way, plus a turning lane, plus your bike lanes, in order to accommodate traffic as well as bikes. Is that correct? Is that what I heard?
Madam Mayor, through you. The length of the Spine Road, Councillor, from Highway 10 to Chinkoosie goes through a number of different iterations of design and right-of-way and program. We're still fine-tuning all of that, but essentially what we're ensuring is that there's sufficient right-of-way built for, as Bill just described, a sufficient bike lane to offer that safe and protective environment for a bike. The pedestrian on the boulevard, the buses, because we've got to make sure that we can get our buses on these roads, and they're sufficiently wide enough, and the lane markings, etc. And there is sufficient space and lane width for the cars that we anticipate using this community, trips in and out of the community. So there will be sufficient for all of those different modes of transportation to offer a safe and efficient environment for each of those users.
One final question. Do I take it that we have disbanded or done away with the commercial mall close to 410 and 10?
Madam Mayor, through you, sorry, the commercial mall?
Yeah, my understanding was basically at 410 and 10, there was going to be a fairly large, almost like a mall with Home Depot and that kind of thing. Is that gone now?
Madam Mayor, through you, no, the idea has not been eliminated, Councillor Beffert. The idea for this commercial centre is more of a regional scale shopping centre, so the attraction for customers is from a much broader trade area beyond this community, beyond Valleywood, probably expands down into the city of Brampton. So the type of form of commercial development that you'll see is probably along the lines of what we call the big box kind of regional scale shopping centre. Your question when you spoke of a mall, I envision an enclosed shopping mall.
No, sorry, big box type mall.
Yeah, that is still the vision for this site, yes, and that's in part, you know, why it's located here, because it's a great opportunity to offer the visibility and ease of access for those kind of shoppers.
But if people have the opportunity to go to big box malls that are already in existence, whether it be Trinity, whether it be further south in Brampton, whether I think there's one planned for... where is it, Alan? Mount Pleasant. You know, should we not look more at an opportunity for people that want simply to go out for dinner or to get products for their dinner? In other words, more localized kinds of shops? I'm just asking if that's been in your thinking.
Certainly that kind of shopping experience is afforded and offered at the Spine Road, and okay, the scale of that shopping site certainly lends itself to the kind of shopping you've just described. So that's located central to all the residential neighborhoods. So those residents, our residents in MW2, will have that opportunity to walk into the village, go to that shopping center site, and do the kind of shopping you've just described. The site at Highway 41010 here will, for the most part, will be dictated. The kind of form and the scale of the size of that site ultimately will be determined by the market and the feasibility of introducing a shopping center at that site. As and when other shopping centers are developed in and around this area, like you've just described, if the trade area, if the market is eroded, then presumably a commercial developer is going to want to scale back or modify some of his thoughts or ideas on this site. It's a possibility. Yeah. I mean, yeah. As and when if we don't get our site up and running sooner rather than later, perhaps, you know, other sites get established and the market is somewhat eroded, and then this site doesn't become as viable for the full scale that it's shown at the moment.
And that's what my concern is. I mean, we've already got one developing at Bramley and Mayfield. We've got another one, I understand, planned for Mississauga Road in Beauvert or number 7. And we've got others that are already in existence, and I just wonder how many you can have without watering down, as you say. Just something to consider. Thanks.
Thank you.
Councillor McClure.
Yes, thanks, Tim. Thanks for this presentation. But I got maybe 3 or 4 questions. The first one is, how do we get it in our heads that we want public transit? you should go to a Southfield meeting or a Valleywood meeting or knock on doors. A lot of people move to this area because there isn't public transit. Public transit has got to make it less safe. Some people are going to move out when public transit does come. That's my thought. Comment on that.
Okay. I think, Councillor McClure, one of the criteria that council has always said, both in Mayfield West 1 and Mayfield West 2, is that we have to plan for future public transit.
Okay.
You can't have the densities that we're going to have, which is 66.9 people per hectare, and not plan for public transit.
Okay, that sounds nice, but we're going to... Some people don't care for it, and it is a safety concern. It is concerning some people, but I get other questions too. But my thought is that we should not be pushing so hard on that. Could I get John standing in front of us for about the trails? Yeah. I do a lot of biking with my grandkids in Brampton, and the trails are great there. But I saw this map between McLaughlin and Chincoosee, Mayfield West too. How if we get a trail there, how are we going to cross Mayfield Road?
Mayfield Road, one can cross at the intersections.
At the intersection, well.
And because it is a very busy road, and if you go there as your kids, you may walk over at the crosswalks.
Okay, yes. Well, doesn't sound real safe to me. When you're in Brampton, a lot of the time you can go under the road, you can cross where there's a creek or something, but there's no. I wouldn't feel safe biking, even walk my bike across Mayfield Road. It's going to be a busy road.
It will be a busy road, and that's why the region of Peel, because we didn't have a choice there, the region of Peel has proposed that they're going to construct, as far as I know, some trails in the boulevards.
Yeah, well, it would be nice if we had something under the road, because the Conservation Authority, they came to us, and they wanted an underpass for animals between there. I think we're more important than animals. There should be an underground trail for bikers. That's my thought. We do it in Brampton some places.
I cannot agree more with you that it would be nice to have at this, Madam Chair, it is up to the region of Peel, actually, to consider that, not to the town of Caledon.
Councillor McClure. Excuse me, that part of the road, Mayfield Road, is going to be expanded and widened. So it would be a good idea for the regional councillors who are in regional at that time, when they start planning that, to push for some kind of an underpass. They did one for the Bruce Trail on Highway 10 going up the mountain, the Caledon Mountain. So
yeah, well,
maybe that's something that...
Maybe we should have another one there, because I can see a lot of people. There's going to be a lot of people there, and they're going to want that.
Well, it's something that would have to be pushed forward by the regional councillors at that time.
Yes.
Okay, well...
And again, the more confident cyclists will just use the intersections and just cross.
Well, okay, some people would do anything, but it doesn't mean I'd want to do it, or my grandkids would want to do it. No,
sure.
Okay. That
I can't relate
fine.
To that. I have grandkids myself.
Okay, thank you. Okay, another problem I got, Tim, that's all, John. This density, in Mount Pleasant area, the density is 50 people per hectare. Is that what it... And we're going to have 66. It's already awful dense there. A lot of people want to move to Caledon because there's more open space. I got a problem with that.
Madam Mayor, I would just reiterate to Council that the discussions on the density of the community and how we were going to achieve our land budget targets, we concluded that exercise of the secondary plan in September of last year when Council endorsed the framework plan.
Mm-hmm.
OK. Okay, Roy. That's all you got, I guess.
Okay. Councillor Foley.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Tim. Great presentation. Really exciting to see an entire community being developed this way. And I think at this point we have opportunities that we might not have later or would be more complicated or more costly later. So I think it's really important we try to do the right thing right off the mark. And to the conversation that Councillor Thompson started when he mentioned the stormwater management ponds, I appreciate your comments about the LED still being on the table. But when I look at the parking lot for the commercial, the village square, different areas where there's going to be a lot of pavement, it really begs the question, are we looking at permeable surfaces for those? Because I think it might make a difference in how many swim ponds you need.
Point taken. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Accessibility, there wasn't a lot of mention about accessibility, but can we assume that that is very much a part of the design as you do the parks, the village square, that sort of thing?
Madam Mayor, through you, absolutely. Accessibility is on that earlier list I described at the beginning of my presentation that we couldn't get into the presentation
right,
today.
Right.
And just by way of skipping to the update, we do have a stakeholder meeting coming up in July, and the Caledon's Accessibility Committee are part of that stakeholder group. So they will see this presentation, or certainly 99% of it, they will have a chance to give us their thoughts and idea about accessibility on what we present to them. So very much look forward to that.
That's very good. Something that keeps coming back into my mind was a bench I saw in Brampton that I really liked. And I think going forward, it should almost become the standard. But it was a bench that didn't have just an armrest on the two ends. It had armrests in the middle. Mm-hmm. So very helpful for someone trying to get up out of the seat. Simple thing, but I think it's important. The bikes, a lot of talk about cycling and pedestrian friendly, which is wonderful. I would also assume then that there's going to be bike racks, particularly where you've got your transit hub and your parks, that sort of thing.
Madam Mayor, through you, that came up earlier this afternoon, or this morning, sorry. Yeah, absolutely, as part of the more detailed design, and it's probably a little bit more of a detail for this presentation, but
right.
The storage of bikes, the accommodation of people being able to lock up their bikes at the transit hub, at mm-hmm. the urban village, absolutely will be incorporated into the overall transportation master plan and community design plan.
Great.
So we'll know how exactly where and how those will look.
And I think even to be able to design so that you could accommodate a bike share arrangement in future, if you wanted that. last comment was regarding the public transit. Is it possible to have any idea at this point about, with respect to what proportion of that would be covered by DCs and what would have to be covered by property taxes?
Madam Mayor, through you, no, I don't know yet,
okay.
Councillor Foley. Those questions will be asked through the fiscal impact assessment that we do with Watson, and once we get those answers, we'll be able to communicate those to you.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Before I go on to second time around people, Mr. Barnes would like to speak, and then I have some questions I would like to ask, and usually others jump in after I open a can of worms or whatever. So,
thank you, Mayor Morrison. I think in response to Councillor Foley, we don't have transit infrastructure, so we have no basis to charge DCs for transit infrastructure. So the answer is right now is zero. I actually wanted to speak to slide 28. And one of the things I wanted to know was that, so first of all, if you're building a transit community, my understanding is that instead of requiring at least a five-lane spine road, we're only going to require a three-lane spine road. If we're going to have a transit community, I would take it that the standards for parking are going to be less for commercial properties than we might have in the other urban areas. And so given all of that, can we put into place in our official plan a value exchange which is required that the development industry, because they will get more land because we're having less road, more land because we're going to have less parking, and number two, they don't have to build bigger roads, they don't have to build bigger parking. Can we have a value exchange put into our official plan amendment which will require the developers because, or the landowner group for that area, can we require them to provide all of the transit infrastructure as both the land and the facilities that we need in exchange for the additional land and the lower cost on public roads that they're going to be paying in the future?
Madam Mayor, through you to Mr. Barnes, whether or not the official plan amendment is an opportunity for us, I don't know. Whether or not that kind of language can go into an official plan amendment, but certainly, absolutely, that kind of discussion, that kind of agreement, and responsibility can be spelled out into a financial agreement that we could that we would likely have with a landowner group as a result of the fiscal impact assessment itself. In phase one, we had something very similar where we needed to address some funding issues, and there was an agreement with the landowners, and that was addressed prior to council considering the local official plan amendment. That absolutely is an opportunity, and I've spoke of that in the past, I think, to council. It wouldn't be a surprise that we would need some sort of financial agreement with the landowner group to help implement not only transit but some other forms of these benefits and facilities.
Okay. I'm going to ask you some questions, Tim.
Okay.
I agree with Councillor Foley about the bike rack accommodation, and I realize that that's getting right down into the nitty-gritty, but I think that that was very, very good. And the permeable versus impermeable hard surfacing, I think the days of everything being paved over or cemented over, they're gone, absolutely gone. So... Now, I want to say that the trail system network, I think it's really exciting. This will be a community that people will be excited to come to and to live in. And the other thing that I've got a few questions, too. The stormwater management ponds, I have to tell you, I counted 15. Well, after the developer builds them and they leave, the town of Caledon has to maintain them and operate them, and they're very, very costly. I disagree with, and I can't remember which councillor said they don't like the stormwater management ponds along Mayfield Road. I disagree with that. We have said all along we want Caledon to be separated from Brampton. We want a different look when you come into Caledon. And one way of achieving that is by having these stormwater management ponds. Maybe there's a fountain in the middle or some kind of a water thing in the middle, and that keeps the water aerated, and at least the ones along Mayfield Road, so that it actually looks like you're coming into the headwaters, which we are the headwaters. So I think that that's really important to keep that differentiation rather than just housing, 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 housing. Then we look. Nobody will be able to tell whether you ever left Brampton, so I want that difference. And I really think that 15 stormwater management ponds, I have a real difficulty with it, because 10, 15 years, 20 years down the road, the liability on the financial side to the town of Caledon is huge, huge. So I think we need to kind of squish some of those together. And maybe make a little bigger pond if we have to, but not all the little dinky ones all over the place. Okay?
Thank you.
You were talking about the community design elements, of cycling and walking friendly, being a walkable community. I'm going to tell you, I've been on council 20 years, and we were talking about that 20 years ago. And it's almost like finally the light bulb has gone on and we're finally getting there. So anybody at this council who has an idea of how you'd like to see your community go in the future, you better get working on it now, because it's going to take 20 years to get there. But I applaud you and staff for finally getting there and recognizing that these are important elements for a community. And that community, people don't want to live in this big urban sprawl. They want a sense of identity. they want to be able to go out and walk on trails and the safety that you have. I mean, why do you think the subdivision across the street from this building is selling out? They thought it was going to take a lot longer to sell out than it has. And the reason is because this community has more trails than any other community we have in Caledon. It's a wonderful, walkable community. And, in fact, that's why I think they named the development across the street Pathways.
Pathways, yes.
And people love that, and they want to live here. I want all of these new communities to be the same, where people want to live here. And they want to live here because they're special, and because Caledon's special, and we have something different to offer. So I'm glad we're finally there.
Thank you.
One of the things, when we did the Mayfield West Phase 1,
mm-hmm.
and we had what they called the beauty contest at the time, we knew there was going to be a Phase 2, it's just which one went first. It was imperative. This council said it had to be a gross acre for Habitat for Humanity, so that we have some affordable housing for people. Because what happens is, I think the developers get excited about developing Caledon because it seems that you can ask a higher price, or it becomes unaffordable for people who are in a certain income bracket. Habitat for Humanity has the opportunity of offering those homes at an affordable price so that some people can live. And I'll tell you, if we don't have a good mix in our communities, we don't have a healthy community. Mm-hmm. So that was a baseline, I thought, for any new community that was going to be built. So Phase 2 had to do the same thing. And I haven't seen any of it anywhere. So I would say that when we're doing this agreement, it has to be there.
Okay.
It was there in the beginning when they were having their beauty contest, and all of a sudden it's like, well, okay, now it's our turn. We don't have to do any of that. I'm sorry, you still do. So, and I'd be adamant at this table, and if I'm not at this table, I'll be holding people accountable at this table. The other thing is the interconnection with Highway 10 and 410. We talked all along about the Mayfield West 2 going along, and we've all been very supportive of it going along and moving. But the key or the big holdback in my mind has always been that connection.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talked to Doug Barnes, Mr. Barnes, about it, he said that will be in the DCs to have that connection.
Madam Mayor, absolutely. The cost of putting the interchange in place.
Okay.
It's in
this agreement, we yep. need that front-ended. We're going to have front-ending on some of this stuff, or else, and then they'll be forgiven the DCs to that amount type
sure.
of thing.
Yep.
But if we don't, I can't see a community being built without having that kind of infrastructure. It would be a mess. So I think that's another thing that we really have to take into account. The other thing that is really interests me, because I used to do more biking than I've done lately, but that's because, I just have my hip replaced. But is the parking and the biking interface. When I saw some of the pictures, some of the bike lanes are right beside the curb. That must mean there'll be no parking. And we'll have to be adamant that there can't be parking, because people sometimes don't think is the best way to put it. And they pull in and park. And then I biked in Toronto on the waterfront trail, and you have to go on some of the roads. And it just amazes me what people do, forgetting that there's active transportation going on
mm-hmm.
and healthy transportation. So I think we need to be really careful that we... There's a city in France, I think it's Strasbourg. We were there a number of years ago, and I absolutely loved the way they separated the bike lane from the cars, from the traveling, the road traveled portion of the road.
Yes.
And it was phenomenal, because when I look at some of this, I know that when people open car doors and the bike lane is on the other side of the parking, they don't look before they open their door. And you could bang right into their car door, or they could bang into you. So I know that that's the typical way we do it. I think maybe we could have a little look at how to be a little more creative. If we're really trying to promote biking on these spine roads, let's be creative.
Okay, okay? Thank you. Thank you for the observation.
You know, but I really want to say that, you know, it's coming together really nicely. I'm thrilled with the bike trails and the trail system and all of that sort of thing. I think, boy, that's the way to go. And we better plan the transit in now. And we said that in Mayfield West 1. We have to do it in Mayfield West 2. I think we're living in la-la land if we think there's not going to be transit at some point. I don't think that's fair to people. So anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now I have more people. Councillor Thompson.
Yes, Madam Mayor, thank you. The Habitat for Humanity was going to ask about that, that it wasn't mentioned in the agreement, but Tim and I figured it out. It's about 8.9 acres for the full build-out of that area is what we'll need for Habitat Humanity and for Peel Living as well, compared to what we had on the east side. And the group are well aware of where we got to go forward on that, so thank you for that endorsement. Question I have is the underpass at the escarpment on Highway 10. I was thinking maybe that was the kind of concept that we would put in from Mayfield West to Mayfield East in the trail connection through the ravine. Is that not being considered?
Madam Mayor, sorry, Councillor Thompson, what was the last piece again?
Up on Highway 10.
Highway 10, by, yes.
Right by the, what was the name of that golf course there?
Devil's Pulpit.
Devil's Pulpit.
Yep.
There's a
Bruce Trail.
Bruce
goes underneath the highway.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah. And to me, we need to look at that kind of a concept versus an overpass. I'm sure it'll be a lot less, but I think that's something we need to consider. And that was my understanding from originally when we talked for years. That's what we're going to talk about. So I just wanted to clarify that. I had that written in my notes, but I missed that. And the other question I have is your tree design on your streets. The big challenge is I'm watching what Mississauga and mature parts of Brampton are having to do is to deal with these trees because, you know, trees are living organisms and their roots, you know, as the drip line expands, the roots expand and it starts to shove your infrastructure from underneath up. And the big thing is I think we need to do is Milton and Oakville have done a very good job is they build around what the needs of the tree are. So if we're going to do this, or make sure we got the right vegetation that fits with the area. You know, it's all great. You know, the trees are cute, just like a puppy when it's small. But when they grow big, we have to realize that's infrastructure we have to deal with. Or, you know, all I'm just saying is we just need to think ahead when we're creating that. And I just want to make sure we've got the right people at the table doing that design.
Madam Mayor, yes, I am ably supported by staff. And also the consultant team in that regard. So we'll address that appropriately.
One last thing to follow up. I guess the mayor didn't understand me correctly, but I was talking about along Mayfield Road versus the swim ponds is lateral drains in replacement of that. Halton Hills has done a terrific job. Brampton on the southeast corner has done that. And to me, I think we can have trail connectivity. You can have beautiful green space versus the stormwater ponds. And unfortunately, Madam Mayor, this is a CVC-regulated area, and they do not want aerated fountains and everything in their stormwater ponds because it takes away the job that the stormwater ponds are supposed to do. And Brampton did one, and they were cleaning it out in 7 years because of what it was doing to the bottom of the stormwater pond. But having said that, I agree with the mayor. We need distinction, but my message was versus stormwater ponds, let's do it in an attractive lateral drain. We can do a real beautiful urban design, but not only that, it's just another way to have a trailway and connectivity as well. And we do know those lateral drains work, that full LID, both in Halton Hills and that subdivision, all experienced that whole ward. We got hit with July 8th. It was a real good test case. There's no flooding in those subdivisions. So it proves full LID does work. And I think this is something that I'm trying to encourage. Let's get away from the stormwater ponds as much as possible, and let's go with low-impact development. We know it's been proven. It's nothing to be afraid of. The engineers can prove it works, and it's been done. And the big thing is I want this to be considered, please.
Councillor Baffert.
Yes, I'd just like to respond to the comments that were made by Mr. Barnes, and I hope I have it right, but I think we have to be very careful. With already the demands on intensification and already the number of people that we're putting together in this type of community, and I relate back to the trip, Tim, that you took us on to Mount Pleasant, mm-hmm. I'm really concerned that we don't trade off more space for money. I think it's really important that we keep as much breathing space as possible, whether it be wider roads, whether it be some, boulevards, whether it be opportunities for people to use those spaces. Because as Councillor Thompson said, they don't have backyards and they need whatever space they can get. So I'm not sure I took what he said correctly, but it seemed like we were trading off some space for some finances. And I think we have to be very careful of that as we move forward.
Okay. Do you want to wrap up?
Well, may I ask a point of clarification from Councillor Thompson? With respect to your ask of staff with respect to the Habitat for Humanity, and I don't think Mayor Morrison gave me a number, but are we looking, is Council looking for staff to begin discussion with the landowner group about introducing up to 8 acres of land in this plan for Habitat for Humanity?
Yes, Jim, when we went through the full build-out and we're using the formula that we used in the east side to the west side, works to 8.9 acres for the full build-out. Like, we're only looking at our partial build-out at this point in time, but that's what the full build-out needs to be.
Okay.
And absolutely. And I've already had a discussion with the landowners on that.
Okay.
So
thank you.
I'm sorry I got ahead of you, but I've been working hard on it.
Okay.
Yeah, wrapping up. Just a very quick slide to let you know where we're
moving forward and next steps.
What we're doing, yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned earlier in the presentation that Caledon has made application to Peel for an amendment to their official plan to establish the urban boundary expansion for Mayfield 2 that allows us to implement all the lovely design we've talked about today. Peel held their statutory public meeting on May 22nd, and we are hopeful of a council decision at the regional level in September of this year on that application. So concurrently, as I've been explaining today, with the help of John and the other team, we've been working on the local official plan amendment, and that includes not only the policy document, the actual secondary plan itself, but the community design plan, the fiscal impact study, the transportation master plan. We will be making presentation, as I mentioned earlier, to the stakeholder advisory group. This council has appointed a number of groups to a stakeholder advisory group for Mayfield West Phase 2. We have scheduled a meeting with that group in July to go through the presentation with them and have more of a one-on-one session with that group. Moving forward with the community design plan that John's team is working on and the transportation master plan that Bill's team are working on, we expect first full drafts of those documents in July of this year. And that allows us in the earlier part of September to move out to probably a public open house with the community at large and show them exactly what we think this community is going to look like and have a similar discussion with them that we've had with you this morning. And we'll also expand on some of the other components that we've heard today that we weren't able to get into this presentation. And I have five on my list, and I'll reiterate them because I think it's important for everyone to understand. Low-impact development is key. Energy and water reduction in our residential products. Habitat for Humanity, a parking plan, and accessibility. So we will do that in September, and that is all leading towards, I believe, me hopefully being able to come to you prior to the end of this calendar year with a local official plan amendment for your approval.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have a motion moved by Councillor McClure, seconded by Councillor Paterak, that Council rise out of Council workshop. All those in favor? It's carried. Are there any questions from the public? Okay, we have you have 2 minutes to ask a question.
Councillors, my name is Alan Furbacher, and I'm a landowner, if I may. I'd like to use a laser pointer just to point to the area that I have some questions and concerns about. And I want to firstly thank Tim and the consultants for all the hard work that they've done. I think they presented a very interesting plan and some good planning principles. I want to refer to the trail and cycling network for my question, and the primary consideration I have is relocation of the school and the recreation area, and if I may, with my laser pointer, this area here. I've had discussions with Tim about this. Okay, sorry. Okay, I'll refer to the screen here. This area here, I've asked for staff to consider flipping over to this site here for several reasons. The first reason is I feel this is a more central area. We've discussed this with our planners and our engineers. Having this school also moved in closer proximity to the other school areas, which I believe are shown here, as well as keeping it away from the railway and the concerns about health and safety. We all know that there is issues with kids being kids, the proximity of the rail line and kids, I think, is a potential concern. And I've asked staff and the consultants to kindly consider that, keeping them away from that area. Flipping it around creates more of a central plan in our view. And also, you've got other uses that or other activities that kids are involved in, right from skateboarding to bike riding, as we've talked about. That also is obviously a concern when you integrate that in close proximity to the trailway system. Also, I want to point out that in this
Mr. Furbacher, your 2 minutes are up. Would you'll have to just wrap it up, please?
My last point is by flipping this around and having this usage in this area, it's the proximity to the Greenbelt area and the trail system in here, I think, would be better served. So those are my questions for staff to consider, and I know that Mr. Manley has been kind enough to entertain some of those.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public? Okay. You have 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you. My name is Sherry Broshi. I have sent an email off to Tim and to staff in regards to this plan. I think it's great. It's exciting to see new beginnings in our community. I do have some concerns, which I did say in the email, in regards to the bike lanes. I personally am a big part of the cycling community. The store in Bolton, my son actually does rides, group rides out of there. In the winter, they train inside, and in the summer, they go and ride our community. Caledon is very, very well known for road riding and also mountain biking. People from all Ontario do come here, even like we have a 24-hour next weekend in Albion Hills. But I'd like to encourage again about the separation on bike lanes. Mayor Morrison, you brought up an excellent point about opening a car door and the parking. Councillor Bedford also brought up an excellent point about the smaller backyards and the more of the streetscaping. So very excellent points brought up by council and our mayor, and I'd like to reiterate that. I have sent pictures off to staff in regards to other alternatives. I definitely would send them to you all if you're interested in. The other concern that I have as well is the parking on the main roads, is the fact that if you separate these bike lanes, you will have more parking, and Mayor Morrison, you did bring that up, and it is a very excellent point. I do encourage cycling in our community. I think it's one of the best ways that we can move around in a high-density area, and my biggest thing is safety. It's huge, and I thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other people who would like to come forward and make a comment? You have 2 minutes, Mr. Boland.
Yeah, regard to stormwater ponds. I understand that High Park, you know, the lake in High Park is a stormwater pond for Bloor Street. So by combining all the ponds, you know, you get a lake that you can boat on, you can fish, and so on. So it's possible here. I was just wondering if these ponds could be combined into that greenbelt area to the north, and made a lake and a pond, and rather than all these individual ponds with a high maintenance cost, you know?
Okay. I think
Okay.
Staff will take your comments and.
Okay, somebody could maybe check into that. I don't know if that's true or not. The other thing is here that is you're planning without regard to demand. You're planning all this high density European stuff. The demand here is still proportionally for single family homes. I don't see very much in the way of single family homes. Therefore, when you create a shortage of single family homes, you drive up the price of, you limit supply, you drive up the price of homes. Your children will not accept a lower standard of living than you. Therefore, by making all this European density, your kids will be leaving to go to the States.
Well,
something
I think, Mr. Bolin, you need to get the provincial policy statements on growth and read them and what municipalities have to do.
I realize that, but if you look back in the history of Ontario, 1975 was when we had the crash, and it was the same result of intensification from 1960 to 1975. They had the intensification policy, which then caused the collapse of 1975. Someone should look into their history of Ontario.
You. Is there anyone else who would like to come forward? Okay. I have a motion moved by Councillor Patterak, seconded by Councillor McClure, that the following bylaw be read a first, second, and third time and finally passed. Bylaw 2014-053 to confirm the proceedings of the Council for the Corporation of the Town of Caledon at its Council meeting held on the 17th day of June 2014. All those in favor? It's carried. Need adjournment. Councillor Foley and Councillor, did you? Oh, okay, Councillor Mezzapelli, all those in favor? Carried. Thank you.